Hey, we did go to number 20, fish production development and plan. Example, what are you going to think?
Hi.
Mike Barnes, hatchery program administrator. Mike Barnes, hatchery program administrator.
Okay.
We're coming. Yep. Well, while we're waiting, I'll just say I really appreciate the opportunity to visit with you, and I really appreciate the sacrifice of your time listening to me on the engaging and highly entertaining topic of fish hatchery planning on a late on a Thursday afternoon. For those of you that toured Claiborne Hatchery this past summer, you have heard some of this already. But assuming that staff haven't shared some of this plan with you already, and this plan has been vetted by the entire aquatic section staff as well as administration, there will be a surprise or two. And maybe surprise isn't the right word, but I can assure you this is not status quo. It is looking at changing how we approach hatchery production. And part of that change, this is a little teaser, is involving an external organization. And that's why we wanted to come to you. We need to come to you for your approval and blessing before we would start to engage with that other entity. And that's the hope for this. So before we delve into the plan itself, I think it's important for us all to understand what it's based on. And that all revolves around the hatchery production goal, which is to maximize angler satisfaction. It's not to produce the maximum number of fish that we can produce, because what really is important is if those fish are going to survive, and hatcheries emphasize post-stocking survival by using innovative techniques, maybe it's throwing structure and otherwise barren rearing units, different than growing fish for food or other purposes. And the second part of maximizing angler satisfaction is to focus on fish quality, which is hard to define but easier to see when you look at the pictures. If we have an angler, say, that catches this washed-out trout that has four fins compared to our happy, satisfied customer with a very colorful fish that looks good, that's very easy to understand. So as far as the hatchery group, though, we do strive to meet this goal. We strive to meet production requests, and that means producing and providing the numbers, species, and sizes of fish at the times of the year that managers request them. And that's important as well. Whether it's walleye fry in the spring, largemouth bass fingerlings in the summer, or large trout any time of the year. We do try to maximize efficiencies, and that might be as simple as making sure the trucks leaving the hatcheries are always full and never partially loaded with fish, or using high-quality fish foods that are extensive but actually produce fish more cheaply, inexpensively, efficiently than using lower-quality diets. We also try to minimize our impact as it relates to aquatic and invasive species, fish health, or the environment. This picture just shows some trout eggs undergoing an iodine disinfection prior to arrival at the hatchery to prevent the spread of bacteria from one location to the other. So the AIS health issues, those are not only within the hatchery, but also preventing the spread of them across the state because of hatchery science. Just a quick review, the hatchery system is made up of three hatcheries, Claiborne Springs, you were there. It was first built in 1927, renovated extensively in 2007 when a bond was issued for hatchery improvements, which we continue to pay for at a little less than $800,000 a year. That hatchery is by far the newest, most up-to-date. McNinney Hatchery in Spearfish was constructed in 1953 with improvements over the years. But there is still a substantial amount of infrastructure that's almost 70 years old at that facility. The last one, Blue Dog Lake State Fish Hatchery, now Blue Dog. Blue Dog was built in 1982, and that hatchery is also a mix of infrastructure, most of which is now 40 years old. Just a few pictures. If you haven't been to Blue Dog, it focuses on extensive production of fish using natural feed and ponds. Pumps water out of Blue Dog Lake, as well as some wells. Claiborne, you were there. Those of you that didn't, this last photo shows some of the new recirculating aquaculture system that we're putting into the old visitor center. And then McNinney is by far the simplest of all the simplest to run, the least amount of infrastructure. There are no pumps. All of the water comes out of the ground either artesian flow or via spring. And so it is a very efficient and cost-effective facility for growing fish. So why change? Last year we had record fish production, and that's a valid question. Why don't we just keep doing things the way we've always been doing them? Well, first, because we have unmet needs, particularly for perchable-sized sunfish and largemouth bass for our community and urban fisheries. We're not able to produce those. We have identified risks from aquatic invasive species and fish health, particularly using surface waters, lake water, or open ponds at McNinney. That is an identified risk. And lastly, it comes down to money. The hatcheries, there's a huge capital cost involved with constructing and running those. And that has to be taken into account as maintenance occurs. Lastly, though, why change? It's all about maximizing, again, angler satisfaction. And we're doing good now, but we can do better. And that's the point of the plan. We're going to jump back to money, though. And if we look at the aquatic section operating budget for fiscal year 21, this is before habitat staff money. So about $7.5 million. That's what was spent by the aquatic section. If we divide that out, about 30% of it went to Hatchery, a little over $2 million. But that's not the whole picture, as you're aware, because we also have capital development funds. And so what we've done in this slide is we're taking capital development from fiscal year 2008, after the bond and all the improvements were done at the Hatcheries at that time, up until fiscal year 21. Over those years, we spent about $7.5 million, that's inflation adjusted. If we break that out, over $6 million is going into Blue Dog Hatchery, a little bit at Claycorn, and actually the Claycorn money was spent mostly on the solar system, which was a good investment that will pay for itself, as well as covering one of the external raceways to boost production even further. And then we spent a little bit at the end as well. That's kind of the big picture here. If we put it in an annual expenditure type thing, the graph shows the three hatcheries on the bottom. On the left-hand side, that's $1.4 million up at the top. The annual operating budget for Blue Dog is a little less than $900,000. Claycorn is about at $740,000, and McNinney is even lower yet, again, because of the lack of pumps and electrical needs associated with that. If we take those capital development dollars and spread them out over that time period, we're looking at an additional over 400,000 at Blue Dog, so in actuality, the budget becomes almost $1.2 million a year. It's what we're spending. A little bit raises Claycorn, and then again, a little bit more at the end. So there are some identified needs with these hatcheries. If we look out over 10 years, the plan was to see what do we need to spend money on these places just to keep them functional over the next 10 years. At Claycorn, we probably need to spend about $200,000 on a programmable logic controller, kind of the brain of the hatchery alarm system pumping. McNinney, we probably need to spend about $200,000 to replace some asbestos in their pipe, as well as an aeration tower that we don't know what conditions that is. If we go to Blue Dog, we're looking at anywhere from $4 to $15 million, depending on how aggressively we want to pursue maintenance needs at that facility. And that's a big question. And this does not include things that might break along the way. So, is there a solution to this huge capital investment, long-term operating and maintenance needs? And I think there is, as those of you that were at Claycorn might have heard, shifting to newer technology, which involves recirculating aquaculture systems, RAS technology, for short. And this was actually a picture from Claycorn where they grew some green sunfish in their shop until the visitor center could get remodeled, and those fish were stocked in here this past year. The advantages of RAS is it gives us geographic freedom. We are no longer tied to surface or groundwater. It can go anywhere because once the water is dechlorinated, it can be recirculated and used over and over. Lots of flexibility. We dramatically decrease our risk of aquatic invasive species and fish health issues because they're closed systems. They're not exposed to the external environment, and we're not bringing fish in and out. We decrease our environmental impact. We're not discharging any fish waste into the environment. That's all going into domestic sewer systems, as well as we, through using UV sterilization, decrease or eliminate our need for therapeutic chemicals to control fungus and bacteria. We've dramatically increased our control, which is what this is all about. It gives us more consistency. We don't have to rely on Mother Nature. We know what is going to happen. Just like growing trout in a situation that we do now intensively, we could do the same thing with bass and walleyes and everything else as the technology improves. It allows us in the same facility to grow multiple species with multiple temperatures of water. So there's a lot of flexibility and freedom in that technology. More importantly, there's a dramatically improved return on investment and dramatically reduced long-term capital costs. So, for example, again, those of you at Claiborne, you might remember these walleye rearing tanks. This is a 6-foot circular tank. Iowa is consistently producing 65,000 walleye, small juveniles, fingerling fish in one of those tanks. To put it in perspective, two tanks will produce the same number of fish as one pond. If we put it in a different perspective, if we have 25 of those tanks, we could, in theory, produce 1.7 million walleye fingerlings, which is the annual request, typical annual request over the past 10 years by our managers. But there's a little catch here. Potentially, we could divide those tanks in two because using RAS technology, those fish are double the size of pond-reared fish in the same amount of time. Because you have absolute control of the water temperature, you have absolute control of the feed, doing everything with. So, just for fun, we kind of estimated how much it would cost to produce walleyes using our current methods as opposed to shifting to RAS. In a typical year, we request that fisheries managers request almost 50 million walleye fry and about 1.7 million walleye juveniles or fingerlings. Currently, the estimate is each one of those fry costs us about a penny in the hatchery, not including spawning costs, and about 17 cents for each one of the juveniles. RAS, we're looking at probably a 60% reduction. Again, and a large part of that is the capital investment and maintenance that goes along with that. Other states, what are they doing? That's a fair question. Iowa is using RAS for walleyes and muskies. Nebraska is using it for a variety of fish on a smaller scale. Kansas is going to invest big time in it. Wyoming is using it. Plus, just recently, California, Alaska. It is definitely the future of aquaculture, not only commercially, but I think from a recreational standpoint as well. So, here's the proposed changes that I'm going to set in front of you today. Before I get to that, I just want to point out this is going to be funded by operating budget and our current capital development request, which is about $500,000 a year for hatchery. Plus, in fiscal year 28, the hatchery bond is paid off, and I propose repurposing that to further hatchery improvement for a couple of years. The changes we're going to do, we'll start with Claiborne. We're going to install more RAS. Again, I threw this up. This is the latest photo. If you were there this summer, you might remember half of the visitor center was blocked off. That's where we're at with the other half. The floor is done. The crew is doing an exemplary job putting floor drains and getting it finished off. Now, we're going to take care of that programmable logic controller, and we're going to, because production is increasing, we're going to upsize their liquid oxygen tank, but we're going to do that smartly and reuse that tank, as you'll see in a minute. And then the last thing we're going to do, if you remember when you were in the hatchery tank room, there were some old offices out to the side. We want to gut that part of the building and convert it into additional using the existing infrastructure, but to its fullest for fish production. Changes at McNinney, we're going to reuse that old Claycorn liquid oxygen tank, saving us about $100,000, and putting it at McNinney to be able to boost production there. Look at a new aeration tower. And then lastly, we do need to replace some of that old asbestos in that pipe that is well beyond its lifespan. Changes at Blue Dog. We're going to repair and maintain that. This year we're fixing the roof, but we're going to gradually shift production as new production comes available, which is already occurring with the pipeline raft, where they are growing hydrogen sunfish. For the first time last year, they incubated and hatched walleye eggs on raft out of pipeline, and they currently have some largemouth bass on station as well. Couple of new facilities are proposed. The first would be in Fort Pierre. This would be adjacent to the current offices. This would be a gradual process. These are not elaborate buildings that are needed for RAF. Fort Pierre, what's envisioned, is just a post-frame building, a pole barn that would go up one year. The next year, we would then finish the inside, bring in utilities. We don't need concrete floors. In fact, it's better without concrete floors for drainage. And then just eventually, year by year, ramp up production until we get to where we want to be. This would be unique, and it would be a hybrid staffing model, and would use management staff in addition to hatchery staff to staff us, so we're not looking at bringing in additional FTEs. All this plan uses is existing FTEs, so no request for more money or more staff. And this would be multiple species, whether it be Chinook salmon, hatching walleye eggs, growing walleye fingerlings, or sunfish for a community or urban fisheries. This is a big one. A new hatchery on the campus of South Dakota State. And I think that, and this is why we wanted to come to you first. We have not involved a higher admin at South Dakota State. I would like your blessing in order to do that. But the thought behind this all is, why would we go there? I would want them to donate the land on campus. And in addition to donating the land on campus, they're going to provide grounds maintenance. So we don't have to deal with any of that in the hatchery budget at all. Hatchery staff would purely be focused on fish production. Being at Brookings would greatly aid in permanent staff recruitment and retention. It's a very desirable place to live, and I think we would have a lot of interest from highly skilled individuals to live there, even within our own staff. There would be a large number of interns that would be available for staffing. Some of you might remember the McNinney model that I discussed with some of you, whereby we have very few permanent staff, but those permanent staff supervise a large number of interns. Part-time interns, full-time, short-term, and those interns do most of the work. It's a very efficient, cost-effective model for fish production. And Brookings would be an ideal place for that on campus. We would have no problem with intern recruitment. And in addition, we would have the ability to look at even more interns. Right now, there are a number of staff in the hatchery system that started as interns, and we could step them through, even within the section as a whole. And this would provide even more opportunity for that. We are right next door to a feed supplier using South Dakota products and South Dakota soybeans. It seems like a win-win all the way around. In addition, on campus, we do have problems. We have close proximity access to SDSU labs and expertise. It just works. And then we already have a relationship with SDSU, and this would seem to only further develop in it. If we look at the cost to build that facility, 6 years it takes itself. My estimates, now this is pre-COVID and everything that's going on economically right now, is for the cost of replacing pond liners at Blue Dog Hatchery, we could build and fully equip a complete hatchery at SDSU. timeline for all of this stuff. This is important to look at, I think, too. Where we're going to focus our attention, these are fiscal years up on the top. For the first 4 years, it's going to be focused at Cleghorn, getting the RAS capabilities there, taking care of the issues. And then we're going to take a break, and we'll look at the tank room later on when we go to renovate. The Fort Pierre office, but hopefully we'll be able to get a post-run building up next year, and then slowly get that up to speed with production coming on in fiscal year 27. SDSU is going to be a longer process. This is at least the proposal. And here we have that fiscal year 28 is when the money really becomes available, and that's something changes. And I should say, this timeline is just based, this is just based on current status quo. It could be a lot faster, it could be a lot shorter, or longer, depending on the availability of funds. We're going to just do that stuff at McKinney with the liquid oxygen, because that's the time is right, but we're going to put off any of the maintenance needs at McKinney until after the other facilities are online, so that if we do need to dewater that facility for a period of time, we have other hazards online to pick up glass. That would be the plan. Again, with Blue Dog, we have the roof. We're going to take care of what needs to get taken care of. But in 9 years, that could become a seasonal facility. There are risks and challenges with all of this, and I would be remiss not to point that out. First, there's SDSU. This is all pie in the sky until we actually start negotiating, and they might tell us no. But I guess I'm hoping you give us the approval to at least raise the question and get it done. The big risk in all of this is, what about postdoc and survival? There are no studies that show how the walleyes particularly will survive after they're grown and circulated in aquaculture versus in ponds on natural feed. And part of the timeline with this plan is to give us time to evaluate those products and adjust our approach accordingly. And this plan goes out almost 10 years, which I know things are going to change, and that's just all kind of factored in, but at least this gives us a vision in the direction we want to go to lower our capital costs every year. And then in addition, we do need to do some research with this post-stocking survival to see, optimize our stocking times and strategies, particularly with urban and community fisheries. Construction costs are a big risk. I don't know the answer to that. A lot of my projections we put together, or we actually put them together before all the COVID-induced inflation, or if it is induced. I don't know. I don't have a good answer to that. That is a definite issue, but at the same token, we're seeing dramatically increased costs for maintenance and repair as well. So we're kind of getting it from both fronts. And then lastly, there is the staff retention and recruitment. If we move into RAS, we are in direct competition with commercial aquaculture. And with the, we'll definitely have to use things other than salary to entice staff from outside of the agency to come work for. But I think we have lots of, with the staff that we have been able to recruit and retain within the system already that could go other places, I don't think that is much of a risk as well. So that is it. I am open for questions, opinions, and I really do hope, you know, that we can get your thumbs up or thumbs down as we get done with it. Questions?
Mr. Barrett.
Thank you for the presentation. On the post-stocking survival, have you seen any, reports from those other states that are using it as far as what they have for that?
Iowa has just started a study. We don't have any results yet. And I think the really great thing about us is we have such exceptional researchers within the aquatic section that when we get into the game, that's going to be, I no doubt that will be like the gold standard of that game.
Utilizing that, and based on some of these current fisheries series up there. We've got a lot of knowledge up there. Do you see kind of a loss or division of that by having fishery staff in FDSU and stuff there versus the way it is now?
I guess I don't really see any issues along those lines. There's still going to be the Webster fishery staff. And in fact, I mean, as far as the future of Blue Dog, after, I don't know long term, you know, with this plan where we stop off, it's a seasonal facility, so there's still going to have to be staff there working. But as people retire, leave, those FTEs may get, well, they will get moved either to Brookings or Fort Pier or somewhere else to better match our labor requirements. And with the amount of collaboration even right now between SDSU and research in the Northeast and other places, I just don't see where we're going to lose a bunch of emphasis up in the Northeast. I don't know if that answers your question.
Yeah, it's just if there's any concerns with
One thing out of this, I guess I will mention with the Brookings thing, that the reason that we can staff it so lightly with hatchery staff compared to what we're doing now is the vision is that the management staff, like the Webster staff and the Ball staff, would be the fish, people actually stocking the fish. So there's going to be a lot more management engagement with the hatchery product, which I'm excited for because I think that's going to lead to more collaboration and a better understanding of how those products are being used and how the hatcheries can better improve the products that they're delivering.
Yeah, can you get back to that timeline,
please? Sorry, pulling that up. So the way you need to know when you give us the thumbs up, thumbs down, is there an actual
I think that's it. I mean, you definitely did not want anybody here to be blindsided if we went to the FDSU first.
Well, I think that they all are not in the conversation.
Great presentation.
Exactly. Very nicely done. A lot of time you have to
say, yeah, it's difficult.